And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We got a lot to get to today here on the show. The Predators fall behind 2-0 in the series against the Carolina Hurricanes. A 3-0 loss last night on the road for the Predators in Carolina. Now coming back home in a pretty big hole in Game 3. As that comes around on Friday. We got a lot to get to today here on the show. We'll take your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, how are we doing? What's going on?
Oh, we're doing just fine.
Are we?
How are we doing? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. It was an interesting post game last night. We'll get to a lot of that coming up a little bit later in the show, but that was something last night.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is, as you guys know, like right before that, we were texting, and I was actually saying, like, yeah, you know, I thought they played, like, way better, you know?
Yes.
Again, 5-on-5. That's the key. That's the key. You got to separate the Preds' performances in two. You know, there's a 5-on-5 performance, and then there's the other performance that was just unbelievably bad. But that was quite a post game. And then I'm watching like the Bally Sports post game show, and Crispy's like, yeah, you know, I had to answer these stupid, ridiculous questions as a coach. I'm like, what are you talking about, Crispy? What are you talking about? Crispy's ripping me on TV. Hey. Katie's sitting there like ripping me, you know, whatever, man.
It's banner night last night for Joe Rex Road. We'll get to more of that coming up a little bit later here in the show. Like a classic case of a misunderstanding last night. We'll get to that coming up a little bit more down the stretch here. Look, we've got a lot to get to today, and we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about the power play and how abysmal that was last night. 0 for 7 on the power play. I mean, it's just unacceptable, and I've got a lot to say about that as we move forward today. Joe, let's just get your first thoughts, and leaving the power play kind of out of it for now for the sake of this discussion. What'd you think of the game last night? What'd you think of the Predators and the way they played last night? And ultimately, you're right there, despite everything that happened, you're right there in the third period. You're down one. You've got some chances to tie that thing up. They're not able to do it. And then you get the empty netter from Aho, and they add another one before the game's over to win 3-0. So I think the score a little bit deceptive as to what happened last night in this game. What did you think overall from the Predators' performance?
Well, we're taking the power play out of it?
Yeah, for the sake of now, yes.
Well, if we're taking the power play out of it, then yeah. I mean, I think it was better. Does better matter in the playoffs, really? You know, I mean, you know, ultimately you win or you lose. And right now, I mean, I still think this series is not long for this postseason, you know. But it was better. I mean, I thought they played like a desperate team, and I thought that they – in 5-on-5. Again, I think some of these 7 power plays that they flubbed were because they were doing good things in 5-on-5 and they were forcing penalties. And I thought Saros was fantastic. I mean, Saros, but again, you know, we're separating them. If you unseparate them for a minute, like when your goaltender has to make saves like that repeatedly on your power play.
Yeah.
Again, kudos to him, because to me, we talked the other day. What did we talk about? We talked about the question of, like, Saros stealing games. You know, how many would he have to steal? That to me was one of those performances. That was one of those, and that was exactly what I was, you know, trying to ask, and didn't do the clearest job of executing. You know, that looked like a goalie stealing a game in the playoffs with some of the saves he had, especially. You know, the save on the 2-on-1, you know, in the first period. But you know, if you don't score, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. And I thought 5-on-5, I agree with you, it was better than game one. I don't buy into this crap that was thrown out there last night by the Predators, that this was just demonstrably better. Like, I didn't come away from that game last night thinking the Predators play really, really well, and they just didn't find a way to win. Like, that's not what I came away with last night. They did a much better job at limiting them offensively. In the defensive zone, they did better, other than when they were on the power play, obviously, and Saros had to make some big saves. But I didn't really think they approached scoring a goal all that much last night. I mean, I'm looking at Natural Stat Trick right now. It's given them 8 high-danger chances for the game, which is – it's not a high number. It's not the worst that I've seen either. It's given them 8 high-danger chances for the game last night, 5-on-5. I'd have to see them because I can count on one hand the high-danger chances that I remember from the entire game last night. So, look, it was better than game one. I thought in game one they played basically 20 minutes where they felt pretty good about their game, and then the final 40 – Carolina basically took it to him. So it wasn't that last night in game two. So I guess you feel better about that. But I did not come away from the game last night, even at 5-on-5, thinking the Predators were just demonstrably the better team. I thought they got knocked off the puck a lot. I didn't think they really approached scoring many goals last night. I was not impressed by what I saw in the offensive zone. And I said it yesterday here on the show. Yes, it's important to defend against Carolina, and it's important not to beat yourself with turnovers and not let their forecheck take over and all these things. But at some point, you've got to be dangerous offensively. And outside of maybe 2 or 3 chances last night, I did not feel like the Predators were dangerous offensively at all.
All right, so so you're saying you don't think they were demonstrably better than game one or better than the Hurricanes?
I don't think they were demonstrably better than game one in the offensive zone. I really don't.
Yeah, I thought the second and third periods of game one, I think the only time it looked like that to me, and again, this is one of those, I mean, Natural Stat Trick confirms what I thought. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I don't know that there were 8 absolute primo chances, but it was an 8-5 advantage, you know, by that particular service compared to an 11-5 for Carolina in the first game. So, the second and third periods of game one, I thought that was the first few minutes of this game leading into that power play goal, and I didn't think it was like that the rest of the time. Now, you also have the third period where at some point, even Carolina's going to downshift a little bit, right? It's a 1-0 game. Everybody realize, okay, it's a 1-0 game. Don't let them score. Win the game.
Yeah,
that's probably some of it in the third period too, but I was really impressed with a lot of the second period from the Preds. Other than all these power plays that kept getting in the way. But again, they did create some of these power plays with how they were playing on 5-on-5. So it just, I thought it was a total mismatch for most of the last 40 minutes of game one. And it looked like a more evenly matched, matchup in this one. So, again, how much does that matter? I mean, we can go back and forth on that all day. I mean, ultimately, if your power play is that bad, and if you don't score, then, you know, great. Then here's your participation trophy.
Well, and, you know, they made some lineup changes last night as well. Callie Yarncroke out of the lineup last night due to a non-COVID illness, so he's not in there. Ellie Tolvanen comes in and fills his spot on the Granlund line. And that's something you pointed out yesterday, Joe. The Granlund line was going to have to be better. I know Cunnan got one chance coming in off the bench, and Nedeljkovic made a good save on that play. I was not impressed by that Granlund line last night. And quite frankly, I thought Ellie Tolvanen was horrible last night. I mean, he was getting knocked off the puck left and right. He had, I think, 2 looks on the power play, got one of them on net. I was not impressed whatsoever by Ellie Tolvanen last night.
Yeah, it wasn't great, and it was kind of an illustration of, you know, the dilemma there, because they certainly have other options that are better options 5-on-5. Now, granted, he could score a 5-on-5 goal in one of these upcoming games because he's a sniper, and you know, and he happens to get enough space. And he rips one that, you know, a shot that nobody else on his team can execute. But he wasn't. You could see why it's a dilemma. And then in the power play, it's just there were a couple times, those rare occasions where they got set up. I thought, you know, he looked okay over there. He did some good things. He has a good feel for it. But is that enough? It's going to be really interesting with him, you know, in game three.
Yeah.
The decision on that, because I guess at some point, it just looks like flip-flopping. If you keep changing around, stuff like that, And again, I mean, I think the case for him is the same. It's okay. The power play has to do something. It has to be some kind of threat, but I think you're right. And I think that, you know, a Richardson, a Cousins, a Grimaldi, guys like that in 5-on-5 could be a lot more effective than him.
At Schmoes underscore goes on Periscope says, it's been the same guys on the power play for 4 years. At some point, it's the players, not the coaches. They're just not good enough, period. They bottom fed on bad teams the second half of the year. We've seen a lot of that the last couple of days. I don't completely buy that that's the case, but here you are. I mean, you're in an 0-2 hole now if you're the Predators. And look, I'm not going to say it's over because it's a seven-game series. You're down 0-2. We've seen this franchise be down 0-2 before and tie it up at 2 several times. But realistically, viewing this right now, it's not over. It's pretty close. I mean, you've got to win 4 out of 5 against a team that you've won twice against all year long in the regular season. I mean, it's – and let's take that last game out of it. So you've had 9 meaningful games that have actually meant something this year, and you've beaten this team once. So beating this team 4 out of 5 times coming down the stretch here, that's a lot to ask for this Predators team. I know you're coming back home. I still expect the environment on Friday night at Bridgestone Arena to be awesome, and that absolutely is going to help the Predators. I expect them to come out with a ton of energy to start that game in Game 3. But we talked about it yesterday. You needed to have this game. I thought your goaltender played well enough to give you a chance. Quite honestly, I thought defensively you were fine for the most part. I didn't feel like you were giving up a ton of chances to Carolina last night. You just could not get anything going offensively, and here you sit in an 0-2 hole. This is going to be a tall, tall order to win 4 out of the next 5 games.
No doubt. You know, but I mean, I think it's obvious for them. It's just you hope that that scene Friday night is a huge boost. You got to win one game because, look, 2-0 has been overcome many, many times. You know, 3-0 is get the golf clubs polished off. I mean, that's you have to win this next game. And I do think that there are some things to build on from game 2 that you can take into game 3. And if you get one, okay, well, now you just have to win 3 or 4.
Yes.
against this ridiculously good team. It reads to me like a 5-game series. Like the Preds will get one here, and they'll go down in Carolina. But you know what? This 0-2 hole, we could take it and we could compare it to the regular season, and say that's about what they were in the regular season, and they fought their way back. It's just this opponent is very, very good, and they're a better team, and their big time players are stepping up in this occasion, which is different from the Preds' big-time players.
And that's exactly right. The Predators' big-time players not stepping up. And you say things to build on. I think that's true, 5-on-5 to some degree. I tell you what they're not going to build on heading into this game on Friday, and that's the power play. That was awful last night. We'll get to that coming up next. Get your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
And the Hurricanes take a 2-0 lead over the Nashville Predators with tonight's 3-0 victory over Nashville.
Ryan, your goaltender able to keep you in it tonight, unfortunately, doesn't go your way. How do you assess this one for your group here?
I think there's more positives from tonight than the first game. So we did some good things out there and playing against a great hockey team, and just got to find a way to do a little bit more.
That was Ryan Johansson after the game last night. A 3-0 loss for the Predators in Game 2 of their series against the Hurricanes. They're down 0-2 heading back here to Nashville for Game 3 coming up on Friday. And Joe, without question, the story from the game last night is the power play. 0-for-7 on the power play for the Predators last night against the Hurricanes. And it was another situation where at one point, like, I couldn't really believe how many penalties they were calling in this series. And it wasn't just the Predators. I mean, Carolina got a lot of power play looks in this game as well. And I thought, again, I mean, other than the Aho goal that puts you up 1-0, which is a great play by Svechnikov across the box over to Aho. I thought the Predators' penalty kill did a good job once again in this game. But the problem is, I mean, that power play, and I tweeted this out last night, and I stand by it. Like, I've seen a lot of hockey in my life. I've watched thousands of hockey games in my life. I don't know that I have seen a power play look worse than the Predators' power play has through the first six periods of this series. I really don't. And I know people, and you brought this up last night too, they're going to point back to that Stars series in 2019, and it was bad, and I think they went 0 for 15 in that series on the power play. We're two games into this right now. They are 0 for 10, and you know, with the rare exception last night, they got set up a few times. They still couldn't even find a way to get set up last night, and you're giving up shorthanded chances left and right against the Hurricanes. I mean, the power play was absolutely abysmal last night. I don't really know of another word to describe what we saw on that power play last night.
Yeah, it's an interesting question if we want to make that comparison. There's another good text exchange we were having last night. You know, actually it was on Twitter. I was like, you know, I still think back to 2019 and it was so hopeless and stagnant, and it was just like, move the puck around, you know, Subban from the point, no one gets a rebound,
yeah,
nothing. Like, it was – I made the analogy, like, this last night was kind of like maybe what you hope, like, Tennessee – well, you don't hope, but, like, what Tennessee might be changing to in football, which is, like, going from terribly boring to at least, like – it's so bad the other way, you know, like you lose in a shootout. Again, yeah. It's kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, you know, this power play provided the other team with all these opportunities. Now, again, that's Carolina's way, but I don't think there's any excuse at all for being a professional hockey team, having an extra skater and having that much trouble entering a zone.
Look, you know,
There's got to be a way. There's got to be another way.
I'm all for giving Carolina credit because, look, we knew this coming into the series. Their penalty kill is great. So they deserve full credit, and I'm not trying to take anything away from them. But at some point, it's math. Like, you have five players. They have four. You should be able to get set up at some point. And Joe, I think part of the reason that I'm probably a little bit more down on this game last night, even 5-on-5 than some other people are, they didn't have their best defenseman in the game last night. Jacob Slavin didn't play. And you still couldn't generate anything on the power play. You couldn't generate much of anything 5-on-5. And their best defenseman wasn't even in the game. To me, that is not a good sign moving forward here. I mean, look, they've still got plenty of guys. And we talked about this heading into the matchup. Carolina is as deep on defense as I think any team in the league is. But Jacob Slavin is a stud. He is a huge loss for them last night. And when it came out in the warm-up that he wasn't going to be in there and he wasn't going to play last night, I thought to myself, wow, the Predators, that's a big opportunity here on the road. One of their best players, not just best defenseman, one of their best players not available for this team. You got to find a way to take advantage of that. And you know, to a certain degree, 5-on-5, but certainly on the power play, they did not take advantage of that at all. And then you factor in not only – I mean, it's one thing not to be able to get set up and to not generate anything on the power play, but the best chances of the game for the Hurricanes offensively came while they were shorthanded. And I'm not just talking about once. I mean, it was three or four high-quality saves that UC Soros had to make while you're on the power play. That should not happen.
They averaged probably, what, one great chance every single Preds power play? It at least felt like
it. Yeah, it felt like it.
At least good, yeah. A few of them great, but certainly, yeah. I mean, they.
And how many times did we hear Chris Mason on the broadcast say, well, you know, Carolina's got their best forwards out there. And, like, that's not to knock what he's saying about that because it's true. I mean, Aho is the one who's getting all these shorthanded chances. But, like, Carolina's not only – they're not the only team that puts out their best forwards out there on the penalty kill. You know, like it's not like they're, you know, breaking ground with that strategy. So, like, it was the last 60 seconds of the first period were
it's brutal.
They could not enter the zone.
Yeah.
They get that. They get that. What was it? The fourth power play chance of the first period.
Yeah.
And they literally could not get past the blue line. It was like LSU trying to cross the 50-yard line in the national championship like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They could not cross the blue line. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, look, Carolina is very good. They do what they do. They're top five in both. We know all this. But, I mean, even when these teams played in the regular season, I don't remember it being this bad in that aspect of the game.
No.
You know? I mean, it was – So it's an interesting – it's amazing that we've come around to, like, is this worse than the 2019 power play? Because to me, like, there was no way to possibly be worse. But also, this power play has been one of the positive developments of this turnaround, at least the first half of the turnaround.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was a big part of it, was all of a sudden they've got this Tolvanen in the left circle, and they've got Forsberg, and they've, you know, they actually are making teams pay. And this is where, you know, look, there's been a lot of reaction on Hines on, you know, the post game stuff. And, you know, we're back to some people just going way overboard on him, in my opinion. But I will say that, I mean, that's one area where, in between games and preparing for games, that usually coaches really harp on, like, what is the plan in the power play? What's the plan in the penalty kill? So this is a back to the drawing board thing for Hines to me. I understand it's still the players out there on the ice who have to execute and in the moment, like, you got to handle that pressure. But to me, like, doesn't there have to be some other plan, some way to make them pay? If they have, like, one guy waiting for you to rim it around the boards over here. So it's basically a 4-on-3.
Yeah.
Like, you have to figure out a way to take advantage of that, right?
You do. And look, some of this is on the players, too. Like, just get into the zone. Like, it's pretty obvious what they're doing. Like, Carolina is paying a ton of attention to Rowan Josi. A ton. And that's fine. I mean, teams try to do that all the time. Josi still found a way at times last night to kind of break through it. But, I mean, Ryan Johansson or Philip Forsberg, somebody, has got to find a way to bully their way into the zone. Like, Carolina, they're standing on the blue line. And to Port's point, I mean, and I think this was probably the most extreme example last night. But at the end of that first period, they had three different rushes to try to get in the zone. And they didn't even approach it. I mean, they could not even act like they were going to get in the zone. I'm not even talking about getting set up. They could not get in the zone. That is a big problem.
It felt like when Carolina was on the penalty kill that they had like six or seven forwards out there.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like it was 6-on-4 or 7-on-4 in favor of Carolina and not 5-on-4.
Yeah.
I mean, in favor of Nashville.
Well, it's funny you say that. Yeah, it's funny you say that because as I'm sitting there thinking about, like, you know, the coaching aspect of this, like, how do you draw something up to somehow counter this? I think, you know, sometimes you'll see, like, basketball teams, if they're about to play a pressing team, you know, they'll have like the scout team go with like seven people, right?
Yeah.
To like give them that look. I mean, maybe the Preds need to, like, you know, go with six or seven when they're practicing against a penalty kill, man. I don't know.
10-on-5. See if you can find a way to break through that. Maybe a strategy coming up in Morningscape before Game 3. We'll continue this discussion. We got a lot of your texts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hey, Roman. I mean, Carolina did what it was supposed to do, win at home. If you guys do the same thing, is the whole thing just making this a three-game series?
Yeah. I mean, I think just looking at the games, I didn't like our game in the first game. We didn't play up to our standard, but I thought tonight we played a lot better. We played, like, again, our special teams weren't good, but I thought we played hard, 5-on-5. We played a good game, so I think we got to build off that. And obviously, going home, playing in front of our fans is always exciting in the playoffs. So we're excited for that. 'Cause mama, mama, I'm coming home.
That's Predators captain Roman Josi after the game last night discussing the mindset for the Predators now coming back home down 0-2 against Carolina in this series. Seven-game series for the Predators against the Hurricanes. Game three coming up on Friday at Bridgestone Arena. Should be a great environment at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Friday for game three. We got a lot of text to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Andrew from Dover texting in. Saros did everything he could. I agree with the announcer last night saying he didn't deserve to have three goals against him. Our power play just sucked, 0 for 7. Come on, Preds, it's got to be better than that. And, Joe, to your point, and this is what I think you were trying to get to with John Hines last night, Saros, you know, was pretty awesome last night. I thought he made some incredible saves. I mean, the two-on-one, I think it was Brett Pesce and Vincent Trocheck out of that two-on-one, and Trocheck just lets it go, and Saros just makes an incredible save in the first period. He made a couple of more on Aho as well, shorthanded. I mean, I thought Saros was awesome last night. And unfortunately for the Predators, the best part about their power play last night was how good their goaltender was in net.
Right. I mean, and I wrote about that. That's what I was actually asking you guys last night. Like, who was that with Trocheck? Because I kept watching the replay over and over because I thought that play was incredible. And it was Tolvanen and botched that. Like Tolvanen, you can't let the pass go back. You know, like the way, you know, basically you isolate it. So, okay, two on one, isolate it. Here's the shooter. Here's your goalie. There you go. Take the other guy out of it. Well, he let it go back to Trocheck, which, so now Saros is moving. He's in position going left, and all of a sudden he's got to come back over. And seriously, it looked like I watched the play like 30 times because I knew I wanted to write about it. I mean, seriously, like he started, you know, it's like his body was being like split in half, you know. He has to somehow get the right side over here while he has just been moving his momentum over here and to kick out and get that save, then stop the rebound. Again, that was to me like what that play immediately in my mind. I was like, see that right there? I knew I was going to write about it either way. I thought, you know, if they win, it's a perfect thing to write about too, because that's the Saros stole the game moment,
right?
It didn't work out that way, but yeah, he was fantastic. And it's not like, again, this is where we can debate the 5-on-5 stuff. He wasn't under the kind of siege that he was, I think, consistently in game one, but gosh, every time his team went on the power play, head on a swivel, you see, because it's coming, it's coming at you, buddy.
That was definitely the most looks he got all night long when the Predators were on the power play, and it was brutal to watch on the power play last night. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, "Why are we not playing Grimaldi because of his speed?" And Joe, I'll say this: yesterday we talked about, you know, Grimaldi, and if Arvidsson's going to play, I just don't really see a spot for Grimaldi in there. Arvidsson has been bad these first two games. I have not been impressed by what I've seen out of Victor Arvidsson. I mean, he made a play at the blue line last night where he just decided instead of, you know, dumping the puck down or passing it off to somebody, I mean, he's just going to sit there and fire it into the shin pad of the Carolina Hurricane defender in front of him. He has to haul somebody down on the way back to take a penalty to stop him from going on a two-on-one rush. I don't know if he's still hurt or what it is or if Arvidsson at this point is just diminishing before our eyes, but he has looked pretty rough the first two games back. I've not been impressed by what I've seen from Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah, no, and that's – I wonder if Hines looks at that as an either-or, because, I think – you know, your point on that whole thing is like you can't be too small in this lineup, you know, against this team, especially the way you want to play, the way you feel like you've got to play against this team to try to neutralize them some. So is that an either or? Because look, I people calling for Grimaldi, I get it. The guy makes things happen. You give up some things too if you bring him in. I mean, I think you could. And you could still make a case for like a Nick Cousins to potentially help this team. There are options. Obviously, Olivier was back out last night, and I think that makes sense, you know, to not, I guess, overdo it with the heaviness. But yeah, Arvidsson is one of those guys. I mean, you talk about their key players. Who do we think like really stepped up? I will say one guy who I thought was just amazing is Josi. I mean, the dude played 27 minutes.
It was a much better response from him.
He had 8 shots on goal. He's all over the place. He's got 4 hits. Again, you don't finish, but I thought a lot of what they created came down to him, and I thought it was way different than game one. If there was one player who like took that and responded from 1 to 2, I thought it was the captain.
Let's go back to
not enough other guys did.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Greg from Springfield, who wants to weigh in. Greg, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, I noticed this about Arvidsson. He plays great in the regular season. Grimaldi does. Ryan Ellis does. But in the playoffs, this game is a big man's game. And I don't know if anybody's been paying attention the last 3 or 4 years. Arvidsson is laying on the ice making snow angels a lot of the playoffs. He is getting knocked around. Even Ellis gets knocked around. I don't understand why the coaching staff and the GM are not seeing this. Arvidsson, Grimaldi, they should not be in the lineup. That's my opinion.
Thanks for the call, Greg. We appreciate it. I mean, look, it's hard to argue at this point, based on what we've seen, that Arvidsson is just not the same guy in the playoffs. And, look, I thought he played pretty well last year against Arizona in that series. But, I mean, he was, to Greg's point there, I thought he got pushed around last night. And that's going to happen. I mean, that happens at times with him in the regular season too. But I think it gets taken to a pretty extreme level in the playoffs, to the point where there have been series that have come and gone, and he's just not effective. He can't be effective. And that's a problem. I mean, and the other thing that's really stood out to me, and Adam Vingan from The Athletic has done a piece on this as well, kind of highlighting Arvidsson and his attempts on the rush and the chances that he's had coming on the rush with the puck on his stick. And those have gone way down the last couple of years. And to me, that is a direct reflection on speed. He is not getting the same opportunities that he's gotten the last couple of years in terms of what we've grown accustomed to seeing from Victor Arvidsson. And I don't know if that's the buildup of injuries that he's had, or if he's still going through something right now that's been nagging at him for the last little while. But he just doesn't feel like he's got that speed that really separates him. And when you don't have that speed and you don't have the size, that's not a very good combination for Victor Arvidsson. And Joe's talking on mute.
There we go. The mute button.
There we go.
Got him.
I've been way better, by the way. Way better.
You have.
I was making an amazing point. I was making probably the best point I've ever made, and now I've lost it. Arvidsson is diminished. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I hear what Greg's saying for sure. Size becomes a little bit more important. But let's also remember, 2 years ago, one forward played well against Dallas, against big, burly, tough Dallas. It was Rocco Grimaldi. I mean, he was – and his speed was an asset.
Yep.
I mean, I think speed still matters too. Ideally, you got big and fast guys. That's what everybody wants. You want big, physical, fast guys, a bunch of 6-foot, 195-pound burners, you know. But I don't think that there's no place for small players in the playoffs. And again, Ryan Ellis too. Not a good game one. I thought a better game two, and certainly a guy who has been, I mean, he's had a lot of really good playoff games for the Pred. So it's not a non-starter to be a little bit smaller in stature. It does get exposed more. And the problem with Arvidsson is if you don't have that burst, then I don't know how much you're really bringing to the game.
Well, I think another player that I'll add into this conversation – last night, I was not impressed with Mikael Granlund.
No.
Was not impressed with him in game one. But in terms of, you know, Greg, who just called in, talking about how Arvidsson's always on the ice, I thought Granlund got tossed around way too much last night, and his butt was on the ice way too much. And that is an issue.
Well,
because I made this point yesterday. He's been great in the last couple of months, and you cannot afford for him to just be a complete zero out there.
You can't, and so far that's what he's been throughout this series. And look, the other thing that stands out after two games is this physical edge that the Predators may have thought that they had, and the physicality that they wanted to play with, and trying to find that right balance. I mean, it's pretty clear that Carolina's not going to back down from that, and I think Carolina at times has been the more physical team so far in this series, and I did not expect that heading into this series. So that's something to monitor as you move ahead here into Game 3. We'll continue the discussion on the Predators when we come back. Bob, hang with us on our phone line. We'll get to you coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Middle Tennessee, discussing a 3-0 loss last night for the Predators in Game 2 of their series against Carolina. Preds down 0-2, heading back in on Friday for Game 3 at home. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line and welcome in Bob from Antioch, who wants to weigh in. Bob, thanks for hanging with us. Thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Good morning, guys. I'm trying to be realistic. I don't think that we have an answer to Carolina, regardless of whether we put out the heavy physical lineup or the more skilled lineup. I think that Carolina is just better than the Predators, the bigger, faster, stronger, more skilled, et cetera. My question for you guys is, which people in the Predators core group, and I would include defensemen and forwards, which ones of those guys do you think are still in their prime, and which ones do you think are a little bit past, either because of getting older or because of being worn down with injuries?
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. We appreciate it. I mean, that's something right now I think is a big question with this group, because from an age perspective, every one of them should still be in their prime. That's I think, maybe the most frustrating thing if you're a Predators fan is you've signed a lot of these guys to contracts, and it's not like you've not seen them play well in big moments before. You have. That's how they got the contracts that they received, because they have played well at big moments before. But when you start talking about the core of this team, like obviously Yossi's still in his prime. He's playing really well for the most part. He had a bad game one. I thought he responded well in game two. I think Forsberg is still in his prime and still looks like it. Outside of that, like Johansson, Duchesne, Arvidsson, they should all still be in the prime. They just don't look like it. They're not playing like they're still in the prime of their careers, and that's a problem as you move forward here. And so, to what we talked about yesterday, Joe, with John Hines saying, look, we can make the lineup changes we want to make, and we can mess around on like the periphery of this lineup and change things up a little bit, but none of it's really going to matter if your top players don't step up and play well. To me, that continues to be the case with this group. That continues to be the talking point with this group, where some of their big-time players that they're paying a lot of money to just have not played well enough to justify that salary. And if you're not going to get that level of production out of them, it's going to be very difficult to win.
Yeah, and I might add Ellis to that. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think Ellis and, like, Granlund, again, those are examples of guys who I thought were, like, really good this year. But there is also the difference in playoff and regular season, as we talk about. That's what it's about, man. It's about now. And I can't honestly go past Yossi and Forsberg in terms of players on this team that you feel like are, to Bob's question, in their prime, but also consistently capable of stepping up at this time of year.
I would add Ekholm to that list as well, but that's probably about
it. Good call. Good call. That absolutely. No, I mean, I think Ekholm is a guy who, and hey, now, maybe not as much with Yossi, but what is it about Ekholm and Forsberg? I mean, they can be very physical. You have to be able to have that to your game, I think, a lot in the playoffs. So it's a big problem. It's a big problem. And you know, I think like with Granlund here, you know, we've talked so much. I said this after the trading deadline, you know, okay, let's see what happens. One, make the playoffs. Two, competitive in the playoffs. Three, re-sign him. But now you watch these two games, and this is his third postseason with the Preds. He has 12 postseason games with the Preds. He has 3 points, and he has way too many nights like the last two nights where he's just – it's just different in this element, in this atmosphere of the playoffs, where all of a sudden he just looks a little bit overmatched because people are playing so physical. You know, I mean, talk about physicality in this series, guys. Canes have 108 hits. The Preds have 88 hits in two games. So we talk about the Preds wanting to get them in the phone booth. Well, Canes seem all right in the phone booth right now.
And to Bob's point, I mean, the Canes are so good. And I think that this at times gets lost in the discussion. Like, to me, I'm coming in today, I've been very, very critical of the Predators and their performance last night. I guess I'm probably taking too much away from Carolina and what they're able to do. They're just really good. I mean, they are a very, very good hockey team. That is not a surprise to anybody. We knew how good Carolina was coming into this series. But to your point, I mean, you go into this game last night, you split up Josi and Ellis. Josi's playing with Carrier. Ellis is playing with Ekholm last night, so it's a different look. I kind of liked it. I thought the look worked out a little bit better for the Predators in that game last night. But I still thought there were some times last night where Ellis is just getting shoved off the puck and he's not able to be as effective as we've grown accustomed to him seeing. So this is an issue for the Predators as they move forward here, regardless of what happens the rest of this series. And I think one of the frustrating things is, as well, we talk about size, we talk about physicality and how that relates to, you know, the core of this group and the production that we've seen. Well, one guy that should be probably better prepared to handle the physicality than anybody else the Predators have is Ryan Johansson. The guy is huge, and we've seen it. He's almost impossible to move when he gets to the middle of the ice, and he's just not able to get there enough. Like, he's got to be a guy that when you get into a playoff-type battle like this, and we've seen him do it time and time again, you got to use that size. You got to use that physicality. And I don't think he's doing anywhere near good enough a job of that in this series so far.
There was really only one time last night of the 7 power plays, and correct me if I'm wrong, where I noticed him in front of the net. There was a power play in the second period where they were starting to get a little bit more zone time and a couple of chances, and it looked like he could have had a deflection opportunity.
Yep.
But that's like the only time last night that I noticed him in front of the net on the power play. Now, granted, they didn't have much zone time on the power play.
They did not.
But to your point, that is something that hasn't happened in 5 years, and I don't know if that's really going to change, you know? Like, I don't know how you really change that unless you just drive it home with him that he 100% has to be in front of the net or else he's not on the power play. Like, I don't know how you change that.
But the bottom line is, last year in the bubble, 17, 18, we've seen him overall be a lot more effective in the postseason.
Sure,
and
for sure.
He's a guy who – some of these guys, it's like, I don't know. Like Arvidsson, I don't know. I don't know if he can really like do much in this series. Johansson, I still think absolutely can. He's got more to give.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. JD texting in. From the outside looking in, it seems that Hines and the Preds aren't able to make changes that affect the outcome of games while in the game. I think one thing we've gotten accustomed to over the last few years is Laviolette firing up the guys and rallying the troops between periods and them coming out with some firepower. Just doesn't seem like they can make adjustments to help them win. They don't buy that. Like, I think they've made adjustments. First off, this is a different matchup. I think this Carolina team is really good. This is one of the best teams the Predators have played in the playoffs in a long time. This Carolina team is really good.
Might be the best team they've played in a playoff series since, what, Detroit in 08? Chicago in 2010?
Well, Pittsburgh probably, but yeah.
Definitely
well, yeah.
better.
Yeah.
But I would
Winnipeg
almost...
Winnipeg 18 was pretty good.
Yeah.
Listen.
I think this is very comparable to Winnipeg in 18.
They're pretty good.
How this team is built.
Let me just say this, and I've seen too much of this already. guys, they did not need to be fired up anymore. They could not have played with better effort. They could not have played with more desperation. Okay, it bothers me. Like, guys, watch the game. They aren't as good as that team. They didn't execute. They're getting their butt kicked against a superior team. They don't need to be fired up anymore. They are fired up. They are playing their guts out, and it's still not working.
Yes. I mean, this gets way overblown in the playoffs about how it boils down to effort and which team wants it more. You got two teams playing hard, and right now it's pretty clear Carolina's a lot better. That's what my takeaway has been from the first two games of this series. Two teams working hard. The Predators' execution at times on the power play has been god-awful, and there's no way to get around that. But I don't think it's because of a lack of effort. I think the players have got problems on the power play. For whatever reason, the mojo that this core group once had, they've not had now in a pretty long time, and that's something that we've talked about a lot here on the show. But it's not always as simple, though. They're just not trying hard enough out there. That's just not how professional sports work.
Like Laviolette and some of those runs, like, get fired up, guys! And all of a sudden they play. I mean, no. You know, I think that, like, the motivation part of a coach is during the slog of a regular season. When it's like, oh, here comes game 53 and here comes game 71, right? That, I think, is a challenge. You get to this time of year, man, they all want it. And, I mean, I'm looking at last night, looking at Benning and Martinook and some of the stuff we saw. I mean, yeah. I mean, these guys want it. They just right now they can't figure out how to beat that team.
When we come back, there was an interesting exchange last night in the postgame press conference between our own Joe Rexrode and Predators head coach John Hines. I think it may be a little misunderstanding was at play. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrode live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.